It is usually present in the fallout released by thermonuclear explosions. When strontium-90 enters the soil, it's absorbed by plants grown in that soil, and by the animals that eat those plants. Once inside the human body, strontium-90 mimics calcium, accumulates in bone, and continues to emit radiation, often causing leukemia or bone cancer. Strontium-90 poses the greatest risk to children and adolescents whose bones are still growing. Along with cesium-137, a radioactive isotope with a half-life of 30 years, it may contaminate agricultural land for generations. In 1952, Mike's thermonuclear explosion had deposited high levels of fallout in the ocean near the test site. The following year, New York milk tainted with strontium-90 was linked to the detonation of fission devices at the Nevada test site. But the unanticipated size of shrimp's yield, the volume of coral reef and seafloor displaced, and the stronger-than-expected winds combined to produce an amount of fallout that surprised everyone involved with the Bravo test. Thousands of scientists and military personnel watching the detonation from ships 30 miles away were forced to head below decks and remain there for hours amid stifling heat. O'Keefe and his men had to be rescued by helicopter. They taped bedsheets over every inch of their bodies before fleeing the bunker, trying to avoid any contact with the fallout. Seaplanes evacuated an Air Force weather station 153 miles from Ground Zero, and 2 days after the blast, the Navy removed scores of villagers from the island of Rongelap in the Marshall Islands. The villagers had seen the brilliant explosion 115 miles in the distance, but had no idea the white dust that later fell from the sky might be harmful. It settled on their skin and in their hair. They walked barefoot in it for hours. About 80 of them got radiation sickness. Many also developed burns, lesions, and discolored pigment from beta particles emitted by the fallout on their skin. And Rongelap was blanketed with so much of the white dust that the island's residents weren't allowed to return there for 3 years. The dangers of fallout were inadvertently made public when a Japanese fishing boat, the Lucky Dragon, arrived at its home port of Yaizu 2 weeks after the Bravo test. The 23 crew members were suffering from radiation poisoning. Their boat was radioactive, and so was the tuna they'd caught. The Lucky Dragon had been about 80 miles from the detonation, well outside the military's exclusion zone. One of the crew died, and the rest were hospitalized for 8 months. The incident revived memories of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, sparking protests throughout Japan. When Japanese doctors asked for information about the fallout, the American government refused to provide it, worried that details of the blast might reveal the use of lithium deuteride as the weapon's fuel. Amid worldwide outrage about the radiation poisonings, the Soviet Union scored a propaganda victory. At the United Nations, the Soviets called for an immediate end to nuclear testing and the abolition of all nuclear weapons. Although sympathetic to those demands, President Eisenhower could hardly agree to them, because the entire national security policy of the United States now depended on its nuclear weapons. The fate of the Lucky Dragon was soon forgotten, but the Bravo test led to an alarming realization at the weapons laboratories, the Pentagon, and the White House. Fallout from a hydrogen bomb was likely to kill far more people than the initial blast. At the Atomic Energy Commission, the fallout pattern from the Bravo test was superimposed on a map of the northeastern United States, with Washington, D.C. as ground zero. According to the map, if a similar 15-megaton ground burst hit the nation's capital, everyone in Washington, Baltimore, and Philadelphia could receive a fatal dose of radioactivity. Residents of New York City might be exposed to 500 Rentgens, enough to kill more than half of them. People as far north as Boston or even the Canadian border might suffer from radiation poisoning. The British Prime Minister, Winston Churchill, was disturbed by the results of the Bravo test. Churchill had been an early proponent of defending Western Europe with nuclear weapons, not conventional forces. In 1952, Great Britain detonated a fission device, and its first atomic bomb, the Blue Danube, had recently been transferred to the Royal Air Force. The Blue Danube, with a yield of about 16 kilotons, now appeared minuscule and obsolete. With all its horrors, the atomic bomb did not seem unmanageable as an instrument of war, Churchill told the House of Commons a month after the Bravo test. But the hydrogen bomb carries us into dimensions which have been confined to the realms of fancy and imagination. A small, densely populated nation would be especially vulnerable to such a weapon. Churchill asked William Strath, an official at the Central War Plans Secretariat, to lead a top-secret study of what a thermonuclear attack would do to the United Kingdom. Strath submitted his report in the spring of 1955, and its findings were grimly apocalyptic. According to the latest intelligence, a Soviet assault on the United Kingdom would have three main objectives: destroy the airfields hosting U.S. or British bombers, destroy the British government, and render the U.K. useless as a base for any form of military operations. That would be relatively easy to accomplish. The heat flash from one hydrogen bomb, the Strath report noted, would start in a built-up area anything up to 100,000 fires, with a circumference of between 60 to 100 miles. If the Soviets detonated 10 hydrogen bombs along the west coast of the United Kingdom, the normally prevailing winds would blanket most of the country with fallout. Almost one-third of the British population would be killed or wounded immediately. Most of the nation's farmland would be rendered unusable for 2 months. Some of the most productive land might be lost for a long time, and supplies of drinking water would be contaminated. In a section entitled Machinery of Control, the report warned that society would collapse in much of the United Kingdom. Local military commanders would be granted drastic emergency powers, and civil order might have to be restored through the use of rough-and-ready methods. Strath urged the government to release accurate information about the hydrogen bomb so that families could build fallout shelters, store canned foods, and prepare for the worst. The Strath report was kept secret, its plea for greater openness ignored. Instead, Prime Minister Churchill ordered the BBC not